spacious skies for amber waves of grace.
Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guest. And this evening we have Dr. John Wilkie, who is one of the leaders of the pro-life movement and works with Life Institute. And he's going to be talking about something which I think is so vitally important, a program that has been intentionally confused so the American people will not understand what the issues are. As with so often is the case, why we have people arguing over nonsensical issues, or in other words, issues that are really not really pertinent. And you hear a great deal of debate about embryonic stem cells. Should we do embryonic stem cell search, or should we not do embryonic stem cell research? And of course, those of us who value human life certainly oppose embryonic stem cell research, but why are we arguing over that? Because embryonic, well, I'm going to let Dr. Wilkie explain to you why this is not what the issue is about. We're debating the wrong issue. We are universally opposed to killing a viable human being to do stem cell research, and yet stem cell research offers so many wonderful opportunities. And with that as the background, Dr. Wilkie, why don't you explain to our listeners what the issue really is here and how it is being intentionally confused so the American people really don't understand what's happening. Dr. Wilkie?
First, I have to review a few facts of how this whole thing started, that meaning you and I. When sperm are deposited in a woman's body, they swim through her internal organs and get up to her ovaries in as little as 30 minutes. If there is an ovum waiting, the sperm then penetrates the ovum, and we have what we call a fertilized ovum or a zygote. Now, what is this zygote? Contained within that single cell, who each of us once was everything then that we are today. At that point, we, it, he, she, were alive, yeah, we weren't dead, we were growing. We were human, 46 human chromosomes, we weren't a rabbit. We were sexed, boy or girl, at the first cell stage, and we were complete, for nothing's been added to that single cell, who each of us once was, nothing except oxygen and nutrition, and that extends from that day of fertilization until today when you're listening to the two of us. So, what does that mean? That means that human life begins as a single cell, and human life in its completeness is what we're talking about every day from there on in. Now, in the natural course of events, that new living human floats freely down his or her mother's tube, and when 1 week old, plants within the nutrient lining of her womb. Okay, that's when we were a week old. Then you and I each sent roots into the wall of her womb and sent a chemical hormonal message into her bloodstream. That traveled to a gland at the base of her brain, the pituitary gland, and it brought a message to her body. And the message basically was, don't menstruate, you got a little passenger here. And so you and I each stopped our mother's menstrual period, and from there on in, we merrily set up housekeeping and lived within her for the next 9 months.
Now, I want you to hold that thought there for just a minute. We're going to have to take a quick break here, and we'll be right back in just a moment with Dr. Wilkie. All right, why don't you go right ahead?
Okay. Now, what we're talking about are embryonic stem cells. Now, how do we get embryonic stem cells? You take this living human and wait till he or she is about 5 days old. At that time in our life, we have a name for ourselves. We call ourselves a blastocyst, but it's really a five-day-old human. Cut open that living human, thereby killing him, and take from the inside of that tiny body embryonic stem cells. Now, what they do with these cells then is put them in what we call a culture. That is, you put it in a broth with some nutrients and the proper warmth and a little bit of luck and maybe even prayers. And these cells divide. And we call this a cell culture. And now you've got a whole bunch of these things, and they want to use them for experimentation. All right, now that's an embryonic stem cell. Now let's be sure we're also talking about adult stem cells. That's a whole different ballgame. An adult stem cell is similar to an embryonic stem cell, but in that it is a very, very primitive cell. Still, they all look alike, they're undifferentiated, but they have a different potential inside. Now, an adult stem cell, or a stem cell from the cord blood of a newborn baby, and we sort of group them with the adult stem cells. Those cells we can get from where? Well, from your bone marrow, from your skin, from your kidney, from the lining of your nose, from the pulp of baby teeth, and a dozen other places. Now, those we get ethically. We're not killing anybody to get them. We simply get them from you, from various organs of your body. So, now what's the difference, and what do they want to do with these things? Well, they think that these cells can turn into almost any other kind of cell in your body. Let's just give an example. This is an adult stem cell now. All right, we get some adult stem cells, we culture them so that we got a whole zillion of them, and then we have a patient.
Hold that thought there for just a moment, please, as we bring our stations on. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Dr. Wilkie was explaining that we have the embryonic stem cells that comes from the blastomere, from the blastocyst, and that is, of course, the forming human being. It sort of looks like a raspberry. It's very immature. It is implanted in the wall of the mother's womb, and it begins to grow. But they will harvest this, and they will culture them. They'll grow them in a cell culture, and then they'll cut them open and take out some of the cells. Those are embryonic stem cells. But Dr. Wilkie then differentiates that from adult stem cells, which you would take from the Wharton's jelly, from the umbilical cord of a newborn child, or the cells that are in the umbilical cord. And these very immature cells can be cultured, both the cells from the umbilical cord, both the blood cells from the umbilical cord, can be cultured, and these are, well, they look just like the embryonic stem cells, but they're not. They are not taken from you don't have to destroy a life to get them. These are known as adult stem cells. And, of course, the issue is not whether or not embryonic stem cells work, because they really don't. But what do adult stem cells do? Well, you don't have to kill an unborn child. So pick up the story there, Dr. Wilkie.
Okay, let's just give one example of one use for adult stem cells. Here's a man who's had a heart attack. The one wall of his heart is almost completely gone. It's very thin and flabby, and this guy doesn't have much long to live. Now, heart muscle cells do not regenerate. You see, now, if you break a bone in your leg, the bone regenerates. If you have some of your skin burned off, it regenerates. But there are three cells in the body that don't regenerate themselves. One is heart muscle. One is the bones of your skull, and the other is the nervous system, your spinal cord. But now we're talking about heart muscle. It cannot replace itself. But we take adult stem cells from your body, the places that Dr. Stan has mentioned, or some other places in your body, it could even be your skin, and inject adult stem cells into that flabby wall. They have taken root, formed cardiac muscle, heart muscle, and have thickened the wall, and it's working better now. Now, that's a first in the history of the world. That had never happened before. And this is being done. It's been done on some hundreds of patients now. Now, you can't use embryonic stem cells for this because they don't work. But adult stem cells have been used for 74 different disease problems. They've been used to restore the macula, which is the thing you see with in the back of your eye. They've been used to replace, as I've said, heart muscle. They've been used to try and clear up diabetes by injecting them into the artery that feeds your pancreas. That's one of the organs inside of your belly. And it has little islands that produce insulin, and insulin burns sugar. If you run out of those islands, then you can't burn sugar, and you've got diabetes. You've got a problem. Well, there's been no cure for this until now. And so far, only in animal models. But what they're doing is taking adult stem cells from the body of that person who has diabetes and injecting them into the artery that feeds this pancreas, this organ. And they are seeding out and forming these islands and then manufacturing insulin, and they're curing diabetes in animals. Okay, that's the second one. Let's think of the most spectacular one that we have seen. Just about a year ago, Senator Brownback from Kansas had a press conference in Washington, and he called to the microphone two young ladies. Now, both of these young ladies had had bad accidents which had severed their spinal cords. They were quadriplegic. Now, we know that you cannot heal a severed spinal cord. It's never been done. But he called these two girls, and they walked up to the microphone. In other words, the spinal cord had reconnected itself, and now her legs were working. How did they do it? They took the stems, the adult stem cells, from each of these young ladies and injected it into the spot where the spinal cord had been cut. These cells seeded out, reconnected some of the spinal cord, and they have partial use. They were using braces, but they were walking.
Well, you know, I think what is so totally amazing about this is this sort of information is not getting out across America. And we keep arguing back and forth on embryonic stem cells and not embryonic stem cells. These amazing things are simply being, well, withheld overall from the American people. And even though you may hold a press conference in Washington, D.C., put on by a United States senator who is pro-life and trying to show the absurdity of embryonic stem cell research, why this information is not getting across America. Would that be a fair statement?
Oh, I think so, yeah.
All right.
All you hear, though, is that just more and more about embryonic. And why don't embryonic stem cells work? They're more primitive than adult stem cells. And that fascinates scientists because they think, well, these cells can turn into any organ in the body, therefore we could cure any problem with them. Well, true enough, but they don't know how to control them. There's three major reasons why they're not using embryonic stem cells in people. Now, one of them is that these come from another living human who has a different DNA. This was a different woman who contributed the egg, another man who contributed the sperm, and you took this new living human who's different than you, and you took his embryonic stem cells and injected them into you. Well, supposedly that's going to work. But, number one, let's just say that that woman or that man had an illness that was contagious. Worst case, AIDS. You get those stem cells, hun, you've got AIDS. And we had this brought home brutally here just in this past storm. 6 months ago, there was a lady who had died, and she willed her organs, and those organs, various organs, a kidney here and this, that, and that, were given to other people, transplanted into four other people's bodies. Those organs carried a serious infection which killed three out of the four people who received those organs. All right, that's a dramatic example of what could happen if you got an embryonic stem cell from someone who had an infection. What's the other thing that they can do? Well, your body can reject them. Just like we give you a kidney, your body doesn't want that. And unless we give you separate drugs to prevent, your body will reject the kidney. So, you can reject the embryonic stem cells because they are from a different body. They have a different DNA. Well, maybe they can control that, maybe not. But the big problem is tumors. You see, no one has yet discovered how to control what these cells will grow into. An example here. This one was a man who had Parkinson's disease. Now, most of you are familiar with that. It's a disease usually of older age and involuntary trembling and a stiff gait and difficulty pronouncing and talking. It's extremely disabling, and of course it can be fatal. Well, if you can do something to the part of the brain that's causing that and produce a substance there called serotonin, maybe you could help this disease, because the problem is a lack of that particular serotonin. Okay, so what they did was they injected embryonic stem cells into this man's brain. A year later, he died of a brain tumor. They did an autopsy, and the brain tumor was made up of a half a dozen different cell types: bone, cartilage, skin, kidney, and a couple of others. And it had grown wildly into a tumor, and the tumor had killed him. So, embryonic stem cells cause tumors. Well, they're not about to use them in humans yet. They are using them in animals, but when they get a tumor, they just kill the animal. But not as easily done with humans, you see. So there are three reasons why embryonic stem cells medically aren't very useful and have not been used to treat a single human illness. One is the tumor, the other is the infection, and the other is rejection. And, of course, I'd add another major one. The only way to get an embryonic stem cell is to directly kill a living 5-day-old human, and that's where you get the embryonic stem cells. So I think there's three strikes plus one, and that is why they're not being used in humans. But if you listen to what you're hearing, if you read what you're reading, let's get a lot of money going and let's get enough research going, and we're going to discover how to fix all of these things, and then we'll cure everything from flat feet to falling hair.
And the thing is that the adult stem cell transplants, and sometimes you can get it from the mucosa, the inside of the nose, from your own fat tissue, these adult stem cells are working. They're working throughout the world. And the American people are simply being entertained with this argument that goes back and forth on embryonic stem cells. And here in California, they passed an initiative to spend $3 billion on research on something that is immoral and I don't think it's going to work anyway, when the other approaches are already readily available. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Dr. Wilkie of Life Institute International, and we're talking about the adult stem cell situation, the fact that really this has been used throughout the world, and it is truly exciting what they're able to do. In fact, I was reading an article in the New York Times the other day talking about how they were taking these stem cells from the individual, and they were growing them in culture, and they were converting them into embryonic stem cells. Well, of course, you can't take an adult stem cell and grow it into an embryonic stem cell. They're just using somatics to confuse the issue. Don't you have that feeling, Dr. Wilkie?
Yeah, what they were saying is that they won't use as many embryonic stem cells, Stan. They're merging them with someone else's cells, and then they're growing lots of them. Well, it's a step in the right direction, but they still have to start by killing a five-day-old human.
Right, amen to that. And this is immoral. It's morally wrong. Now, what somebody was calling and asking in about the situation as far as the initiative here in California, where the taxpayers very foolishly and misguidedly influenced it all by the gentleman who that played Superman, who was quadriplegic, and by a young man named Fox, who has Parkinson's disease. He's in his 50s. I think it's Michael Fox. And they were pleading with people to appropriate the money so their disease could be helped, even at the expense of sacrificing the lives of unborn children, or certainly human beings, to do that. Do you have any idea what's going to happen to this $3 billion that the people of the state of California have actually appropriated? They've agreed to actually issue bonds, which we're going to have to, of course, pay back someday, to come up with $3 billion. Somebody's going to get an awful lot of money, aren't they?
And don't forget that Nancy Reagan put her oar in the water on that one, too. She said that poor lady was misguided. She was thinking that maybe they would discover a cure for Alzheimer's, which killed her husband. But there's one thing that all scientists agree on, and that is, while the sky may be the limit for using at least adult stem cells to cure all kinds of problems, the one thing they'll never cure is Alzheimer's. Now, the reason is that most diseases affect a single cell. I've mentioned diabetes, where there's a single cell. Parkinsonism, a single cell is the problem. But Alzheimer's is multiple cells. And it would be literally beyond imagination to think that they could chase all the different kinds of cells that are involved in the deterioration of Alzheimer's. So, but you're asking about California. What happened out there? Well, it was the biotech industries who stand to make a pile of money on this, who wanted taxpayers' money in order to do their research.
And they could get this from legitimate organizations that are funding the adult stem cell research, and the only place they could get the money was from the gullible public.
You're right on the ball, of course. You see, people who put money, we call them venture capitalists. Somebody comes to you, let's say you're rich. Somebody comes to you with a widget, and they say, now look, if I've got the invention here, if you will fund me on this, we can produce a bunch of these, and we can make lots of dough, and we'll split it. Well, that's a venture capital. He puts up money, somebody else uses the brains.
Hold that thought right there for just a moment. We'll bring our stations on. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Dr. John Wilkie of Life Institute International, and we're basically talking about what's going on as far as California, where we appropriated here in the state of California some $3 billion for embryonic stem cell research. Now, certainly, if this had been a good idea, if there had been any hope of really making this thing work, the people would have been able to have gotten the money from a venture capitalist. But the venture capitalists are investing in the adult stem cells because they're smart enough to know that the embryonic stem cells, at least so far, hold literally no promise. So what did they do? Well, they went and they got the initiative passed. $3 billion, the people of the state of California went out and borrowed $3 billion, and that money is going to go in large part to the people who, want the money for themselves, for their research. They're going to make a bundle of money. And we'll pick up the story there, Dr. Wilkie.
Yeah. Some of that money came from good-meaning, well-meaning people who were multi-millionaires in Silicon Valley who had children with juvenile diabetes. Now, at the moment, there's no cure for that, although adult stem cells may well be that cure. These folks were convinced, they were sold on the deal, that if they underwrote the California thing and they had enough research, that a discovery would happen that would cure their children. Now, this was shameful that they exploited these people like this, but that's exactly what they did. And they've convinced enough voters. Of course, they threw a lot of money at this. People didn't know one cell from another. A lot of them voted for it. And worse yet, your governor underwrote it. And he said it was a good idea. And I think that and Nancy Reagan probably made the difference. But
we don't know
what's going to happen to that dough. We do know that there's an awful lot of biotech companies are going to get exceedingly wealthy over this. Whether they discover anything or not, we don't know.
In fact, the people who are really pushing it were the very people who were going to benefit from it. And they're not interested in helping people. They're interested in making money. And I think that's unconscionable. I think that, you know, if it had been a good idea, they could have got to venture capitalists and gotten the money. For the research, they didn't want to do that. They wanted to perpetuate this argument about should we or should we not be doing embryonic stem cell research when adult stem cell research has already offered so many wonderful, wonderful, almost miraculous cures.
And so we don't know what's going to ultimately happen here. We do know there's a lot of people going to get very rich in California, and the chances are by the time... there's another reason here, Stan, we probably ought to mention, and that's scientists. Scientists explore the unknown. Embryonic stem cells are an unknown. And that is the lure of research scientists. Now, a lot of them don't give a fig about killing babies in abortion, so they certainly don't have any problem with killing a five-day-old living human embryo. What they want to do with these embryos and with the cells they get from them is experiment on them. And, of course, what they're doing is killing these five-day-old humans. They say, these are just from frozen embryos, and they've been in storage, and they're going to be thrown away anyway, and why don't we get some use out of them? And that's an argument that convinced a lot of people. Well, I'll tell you, you're a historian, Stan, and I think I am a bit, too. Nazi doctors experimented on Jews, and then they killed them. What did they say when they were at the trials of Nuremberg? They said, well, these Jews were going to be killed anyway, and we thought that we would experiment on them before they got killed and that we might find out some scientific advances.
And this idea that we might do some good from our science totally disregards the humanity of the people. That they were experimenting on.
And the judges at Nuremberg hanged some of those doctors for crimes against humanity. But if you reduce the age, instead of, quote, going to be killed anyway Jews, but now going to be killed anyway living human embryos, very same thing. They're all just as human, they're just as alive, and after their experiments, they're just as dead.
Well, I think that we live in a time of where the basic morals, this idea of right and wrong, the sanctity of human life certainly has been sacrificed. And we as a nation, have done exactly what the ancient children of Israel did, is they sacrificed their children to the fires of Moloch. And, of course, God then brought terrible judgment on them. That's why, of course, every man, woman, and child in Jericho was to be killed. Why? Because they had killed their children. Will God be any less merciful on America, or any more merciful on America? We're going to be back in just a moment with Dr. John Wilkie right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Dr. John Wilkie from Life Issues, and we're going to be talking about this whole issue of adult stem cell research, which is what the real issue. The real issue is, should we or should we not be doing embryonic stem cell research? Or should we, the issue is, what can we accomplish and what wonderful things have been accomplished here using adult stem cells? Now, has that research been done in America? Is a lot of that research being done in other countries throughout the world?
It's being done in all different countries, Stan. Some people might just be tuning in. Let me give them one more example of cures with adult stem cells. Here was a girl in Germany, and she had a bad accident. And the top of her skull was sheared off. Happily, it didn't touch her brain. But she was left without what you might call a skull cap. Well, most of you listening have heard what we do in a case like that. We put a metal plate in there. Well, why not let it grow back? Well, because skull bone does not grow back. It's one of the organs of your body that will not replace itself. And so they did have a sort of a skull cap for this little girl. When they took it off, you could see her brain pulsating underneath a thin, sort of a skin-like thing that we call a dura mater. Now, up until now in the history of the world, that would be the beginning and the end of it. But they tried something new. They took some of her bone from her hip. They ground it into a powder. Then they took adult stem cells from the lining of her nose. They grew them in a culture. They mixed the two together, and like a little plaster on the wall, they spread this over the top of that exposed brain. And you know what? Those cells thought they were skull bone, and they formed a new skull bone cap for that little girl. That's a first in the history of the world. Now, what did that? Embryonic stem cells? No. They would not have done it. Adult stem cells did it. But, Stan, did you read about that one in the newspaper?
No, in fact, that's one reason why I was so fascinated as we've talked to you on this issue, because this information is being withheld from the American people as we simply confuse them with a lot of talk about something that is not the major issue. And the fact that most of our listeners have not heard what you've been telling us this evening and on other programs is simply a reflection of the degree of control that exists today of what the American people think.
Let's try another one. One of them.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Dr. John Wilkie. And Dr. Wilkie was just telling us about this amazing situation. When you have children or anybody who loses a large part of their bone of their skull, that bone does not grow back. Well, ordinarily, of course, what the neurosurgeon does then is to put a metal plate in. But there was a little girl in Germany who lost a large part of the skull, and what they did is they simply took the adult stem cells. Now, they grow these in culture, so they'll have a large number of them, and they ground up some bone, whether it was from her or from someplace else, and then, of course, they put it together in a paste, and they just spread it over the top of her skull, over the top of her exposed brain, and it grew back into a normal, or essentially normal, skull. Because this is the tremendous capacity of adult stem cells. These cells that have a pluripotential, a fancy word for basically saying they have the ability to develop many different things. They can develop into bone, or they can develop into nerve tissue, or they can develop into heart tissue, or they can develop into blood tissue, the bone marrow tissue. I mean, they can develop into all sorts of things if they simply get the command, and these cells want to actually differentiate into specific things, and as long as they're being directed. So this is really one of those amazing, amazing stories that most people have never heard of, because they want to get you arguing back and forth about embryonic stem cells. And you, Dr. Wilkie, you said you had another example you wanted to give us.
Well, let's try the eye. I think there's about 100 of these have been done now. If you take the back of the eye, the macula is the sensitive portion of the eye that feeds into the nerves that go to the brain that tell you what you're seeing. Okay, now we have things, you may have heard of macular degeneration. When that particular part of the back of the eye starts to degenerate, at the very end of that, you're blind. But in any case, what they've done now with that same individual's adult stem cells, I think in this case they took the stem cells from that person's skin and were able to isolate adult stem cells, injected them through the eyeball into the back of the eye, into that area back there. Some people compare that to photographic film. And those cells took root and increased those person's vision. Whereas before that, their vision was fading progressively. Now they've got most of their vision back. Adult stem cells, not embryonic stem cells.
And the fact that the most amazing thing is this is not being covered here in the United States. It's almost as if somebody was intentionally blocking out the information. And, you know, these are the most incredible things. And of course, now doctors have the ability to run catheters into various areas, to run a catheter right into the, say, the artery that goes to the pancreas, and to actually seed the cells there. And I'm sure before long they're actually going to be seeding the cells into the pancreas to see if they can get the new islets of Langerhans to grow, which of course will solve the problem as far as diabetes is concerned. The potential here is great and marvelous, and yet we're debating the wrong issue. Well, before we go on, Dr. Wilkie, I would like you to tell our listeners how they can get in touch with the Life Institute, and they can get the material you have, and how they can get to your website.
Well, I think very simply, for those of you who know about email and websites, email is info@lifeissues.org. That's info@lifeissues, LIFEISSUES.org. And our website, which contains all the kind of things I've been telling you and lots more, the 3W.lifeissues.org. Again, that's our website. You can open up the website, take a look around, tell you all kinds of things. You want to know about the RU486 drug. You want to know about abortion. You want to know about adoption. We have a pretty comprehensive website, and of course what we've been talking about here, and again cloning, and all of that is on our website.
In fact, you, when we last talked, you mentioned this this wonderful situation where they've been able to actually clone a dog, and they actually have had pictures in the newspaper about the big dog and the little dog who was cloned. But of course, this really wasn't anywhere as near as simple as we've been told, was it?
It took 1,000 dogs before they finally got one to succeed, and he's a nice looking mutt, but. It took 1,000 failures before they got him to... What is cloning? Let's explain that to our folks. Let's just take that, you who are listening, and okay, you're a woman. You'd like an identical twin sister. Okay, here's how you would do it. It's all theoretical. We take one of another woman's egg, and we would hollow it out. We'd take the nucleus out of it and throw it away. Now we've got the shell of her egg. Now we take one of your skin cells, and we take the inside out of it, the nucleus, we throw the shell away. So we then take your nucleus and her shell, put the two together, and give it a little electric charge and in the right temperature and so forth, and this new zygote, this new fertilized ovum, thinks that she is a new living human, and theoretically at least should start to grow just like if you had conceived a little girl that way. Now, if you would plant this new living human in a woman's womb and carry her to term, she would deliver a little girl who'd be your identical twin, however, obviously only an infant. Now, that's the theory of it. It does not work. It has not worked in humans. at least so far we've had a few reports, but we really don't trust them. When I was, Stan, I'm sure when you were in med school, when you spoke about cloning, you thought about frogs, because they could clone frogs. These were cold-blooded, we call them amphibians, and but nothing else would ever get cloned. Certainly a mammal, a warm-blooded animal, would never be cloned. Well, about 6 years ago, there is Dolly the sheep in Scotland. She was a cloned sheep. Well, that news went around the world. It was the first time in history that this had happened. It was a tremendous event. They had failed on 300 others before Dolly finally survived and was a sheep. But she looked normal. She even delivered a lamb. But then she rapidly aged. And by the time she was 3 years old, she had crippling old age arthritis and crippling old age pulmonary insufficiency. Her lungs were going bad. She couldn't breathe, and they had to put her away. Now, sheep don't, you know, good sheep can live 10, maybe even 15 years. So there was something wrong with her that made her age prematurely. I don't think you read that in the newspapers. But then they went ahead to say, well, if we can clone a sheep, we can clone other warm-blooded animals. And they have. They've cloned a horse. Now they've cloned a dog. And, of course, they want to clone humans. But the problem with cloning a human, if you could, is all of these failures. You see, why did it take 300 tries to get Dolly? Well, because here they had a lamb, and the lamb was starting to grow, and they took a second look, and the lamb had five legs instead of four. They killed it. The next lamb died in the womb. Another one had what we call gigantism, was delivered, and was huge, killed it. Another one had a deformity of the brain, etc. And so with animals, if you clone one that comes out very abnormal, you just kill them. With humans, I'm sorry, we just aren't going to do that.
At least not quite yet.
Okay. So, anyway, cloning a human, then, to bring the person to term and deliver, nobody at this point wants to do that. Ah. But they decided they still wanted to clone humans. So what are they going to do? They have told us there are two kinds of cloning. One is reproductive cloning. The other is therapeutic cloning. Now, reproductive cloning is what I've just explained. Fertilize, bring to term, and deliver. No, we're not going to do that in humans. But then therapeutic cloning, which is misnomer, this isn't therapy at all, is that you would do the very same thing. And you would bring this new cloned human to 1, 2, maybe 3 weeks old, do some destructive experiments on him or her, and then kill him. Now, they call that therapeutic cloning. But therapy means to heal. And this is killing. So, that doesn't make any difference to them. They're trying to pull the wool over our eyes. Now, Bush calls this research cloning. Okay, that's an acceptable term. That's what it is. We have a better word for it in the right place. We call it clone and kill, because that's exactly what they're going to do.
Well, you know, the use of words or the misuse of words can be so confusing. Words many times are used to deceive the public, and you use a term that sounds so great, like therapeutic cloning, as if you're going to do some treatment and help people, whereas, of course, it's simply another word for murder.
Yeah. Now, why do they want to clone? Well, if you recall, I said one of the reasons why they can't use embryonic stem cells in humans is that it's foreign tissue and that your body might reject it. Well, if you were to clone a human, take them to 5 days old and kill them, and use that embryonic stem cell, now you're using a cell that in effect came from your own body. so your body would not reject that cloned cell. You've still got the problem with it forming tumors, you've still got the problem with passing infection, but that would answer, maybe, one of the problems. We're not sure it would, because there's other substances in the shell, we call them mitochondria, which are still transferred from the original eggshell, and which could then be rejected or cause other trouble. But in any case, cloning now then is intrinsically linked with the embryonic stem cells. But clone and kill is the word you want to remember.
And you know, the great tragedy of today is that our scientists are trained in universities. And universities are based, on science, and where they have accepted so many things that really aren't true. When you're trained to be a scientist, most scientists, at least many scientists, do not believe in God. If there is no God, then you can do whatever you want to. And if you want, of course, to clone a human being, if you want to kill a 5-day-old child, a 5-day-old human being, it's perfectly all right. Where we lose sight of this is there is a God, and there are rules that we have to follow. And between man's plan in time and God's plan in eternity, there's an infinite quality of difference. And when man begins to play God, as so many of our scientists do, who disbelieve in God, they forget about humanity, and they forget about the importance of human life. As long as it's done in the name of science, they justify it, but that doesn't justify it at God's sight, do you think?
I think so, Stan. And the tragedy of this is, and some of you may have tuned in a little late, is that we have what we call adult stem cells, which come either from the umbilical cord of a baby or from your bone marrow, your skin, other areas of your body. And those we can get ethically. We've learned how to culture them so that they become very numerous. We're using them to inject and treat 74 different human diseases, some of them very successfully, like heart problems, like a severed spinal cord, and so forth. But we hear almost nothing about these. They are being well-funded by private money because that's where the progress is. All you hear about are embryonic stem cells. And to repeat once more, the only way we can get these is to take a 5-day-old living human embryo, cut him or her open, and take the cells from the inside. Once you have them, the scientists want to experiment on them, and California is going to spend $3 billion for those experimentations. But as I've mentioned, there are three major reasons why they aren't working and just possibly never will. One is that they can carry infection from the donors. Another is that they'd be rejected because they're foreign tissue. And the big bugaboo is that they can't control their growth. If they inject those into your body, they're liable to turn into almost any kind of an organ. And I mentioned a case where they did this in a man's brain, and these things turned into a half a dozen different cell types, bone, cartilage, kidney, skin, and a couple of others, and killed a poor guy with a brain tumor. But those were embryonic stem cells. So they don't work. They have a possibility that they never will, but California's going to spend $3 billion to find out.
Well, my understanding is that they actually have, with a certain number of people, how many it is, I don't know, but people with Parkinson's disease who are just so miserable with this terrible disease that they were willing to be used as guinea pigs, and that the embryonic stem cells were injected into the area where it's involved with Parkinson's disease, and many of these people actually got worse. Had you heard those stories?
Well, we hear apocryphal stories. There's nothing published in the literature yet about it, but one of the things that some of them have developed, and this is a big long name, Stan, tardive dyskinesia. Remember what that was? This is something that develops when you get a reaction to certain kinds of drugs that we use for people with very, very severe psychoses. And it's a damage that is done. And what happens is that it, from there on in, for the rest of their life, they have involuntary movements, movements of their arms and hands, movements of their head, drooling, and so forth. And this is something, tardive dyskinesia can come from embryonic stem cells. Another reason they're not going to use them, but they're going to use them, experiment on them, and then they're going to kill these 1-2-week-old embryos that they experiment on.
Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment to wrap up this evening's program. Dr. Wilkie, let's get your website out just one more time.
Okay. Website is www.lifeissues.org. LIFEISSUES.org.
All right, fine. Thank you so very much. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We do have one caller, and his name is Roger. Roger, do you have a question for our guest?
Yes, thank you, gentlemen. Sort of two questions.
Best combined. We only got time for one, so what is it, Roger?
Well, best combined into one. Is there anything to suggest, Dr. Wilkie, that anything but autologous self-donated cells would not be long-term problematic? And
how do you mean? What is the specific question?
Well, likely regulatory and immunosuppressive problems, and that, on the other hand, for the embryonic cells, anything to suggest that even though they start out immunosuppressed, that once they're differentiated into target cells, that immunity wouldn't reassert itself, the rejection problems.
That's a theory, but at the moment that has not been proven. It is a hope of scientists that because embryonic stem cells are so primitive that they will not be rejected. On the other hand, they are of a different DNA, and theoretically, these guys think may be able to get around it. Actually, you still are talking about foreign tissue.
And, of course, the thing is about the adult stem cells, especially if they're taken from the person that they're going to be reinserted into, you don't develop this as a problem at all, do you, Dr. Wilkie?
Yeah, there's no problem there at all. And what we're faced with now is that we're getting spectacular results with adult stem cells, no results with embryonic. Why not pursue the winners? And, of course, they are being pursued with private money, but scientists, being scientists, want to pursue the unknown, and that's fine until you run into the fact that they're going to do it over the dead bodies of five-day-old living humans. And there, I think I'd want to draw the line.
And I think we have to draw the line. I think it's a very, very important issue. I think that this is being done, certainly in many other countries. There's no, and I know that there are some people here who are working with it as well, but we're just not hearing about it. And, of course, what we're doing is talking about an issue which is really, I think, is designed specifically to keep idle minds busy, as one of the most exciting scientific advances of all time is taking place, and yet the average American is not, for one reason or another, being allowed to hear about it. Dr. Wilkie, thank you so very much for being with us. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you, Stan.
And certainly, and that we certainly look forward to having you again here as a guest on one of our Radio Liberty programs. Again, our guest is Dr. John Wilkie from Life Issues, and their website, www.lifeissues.org. Good night, and God bless you, sir.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, fine. This is Dr. John Wilkie, and we always enjoy having him. I hope you enjoyed him, too. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening has been Dr. John Wilkie talking about the adult stem cell research and the fact that this is not being talked about in the United States, and yet it's being talked about in scientific journals. It's being talked about by scientists. It's being done throughout the world while they focus our attention on a non-issue. The issue, of course, getting the pro-life people arguing on one side and the pro-death people arguing on the other. And the major thing is what wonderful opportunities we have to help people. We're on the edge, really, of some great scientific advantages, or advances, and the average person is not hearing at all about the adult stem cell research that has taken quadriplegics and allowed them to begin to stand and, in some instances, walk with supports. Some of the most exciting things going on, and yet, of course, totally unknown to the average American. Because, unfortunately, in the United States, our media is tightly controlled by five mega corporations. And those of you who have not yet read the book, The New Media Monopoly, written by Dr. Ben Bekdakian, who is a professor up at the University of California in Berkeley, that was professor in charge of the Department of Journalism for many years. And in 1983, he began studying the American media, and he found out that at that time, 50 mega corporations dominated the media in the United States. By 2004, when the last issue of his book came out, five mega corporations dominated the American media, and largely determined what the American people read, heard, and saw. Now, why doesn't the average American know this? Why? Because the media is controlled. And until people understand that, they cannot understand much of what's going on today. They can't understand the issue we've been talking about this evening with Dr. Wilkie, and how certain information is suppressed, and other information that is relatively unimportant is brought out and argued about and struggled, and people hurling charges in both directions. The purpose? To keep idle minds busy. Well, we do hope that many of you in the listening audience will go to our website at www.radioliberty.com. That's www.radioliberty.com, where you can listen to our programs on the Internet directly or indirectly, 5 hours a day. You can listen to our archive programs. We ask you to go there and to pull down our newsletters and to read them, to study them, to copy them, to disseminate them. And if you find that much of what we say, if you listen, seems just untenable, this really couldn't be true, why we couldn't have media control in America, we simply ask you to check our facts, to evaluate what we say and try to prove us wrong. If you'd like to get certainly a copy of this program, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to get a free newsletter, we'll be glad to send you one. Again, our number is 1-800-544-8927. I would suggest our newsletter, The Occult Hierarchy, Part 2, because there really is an occult hierarchy that dominates the world in which we live, and we simply quote not from what I say, but from what members of the occult hierarchy say. So if you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, 1-800-544-8927, and then, of course, we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival. We ask you to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow at the same time, Dr. Stan, goodbye. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, and tonight we have with us Dr. David Kennedy. And we're going to be talking about one of the most dangerous things going on in America today, and that is water fluoridation. Now, most people think that this is a settled issue. After all, the dentists support water fluoridation. The doctors support water fluoridation. The National Institute of Health and the Centers for Disease Control and the EPA and all support water fluoridation. And that really isn't true. The scientists at the EPA have been trying for years to let the American people know that they're being slowly poisoned. Maybe not even so slowly. Maybe they're being more rapidly poisoned by the introduction of a pesticide, an insecticide, as a bactericidal agent into our water supply. And rat poisoning is simply a fluoride. And the reason that toothpaste works so well in your mouth is because it's fluoridated, and it kills the bacteria on contact. And certainly if you want to, kill bacteria, you put fluoride in, it's going to kill them. And yet we're putting it into our water. And the impact on the people and the health of our public, we see skyrocketing rates of heart disease. Why is it going up? Well, you go to Newburgh, New York, where the initial experiments were done with water fluoridation. After a year, after 10 years, they had twice as much heart disease in Newburgh as they had in the controlled city. But nobody ever mentioned that. All they told you about were how, of course, the children had fewer cavities, and they've taken an industrial pollutant, which is what a fluoride is, and turned it into a panacea. Well, with this evening, Dr. David Kennedy has been one of the leaders of this battle, trying to get people to understand how they're poisoning our children. Dr. Kennedy, thank you so much for being with us again.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan, for having me on and telling your listeners about the terrible scam that's going on in our country.
You know, it's amazing to think that they could convince so many good people that something so terribly harmful, is good.
You know, if I had a whole truckload of some really bad stuff, I'd put a sign on it, good for babies, and get people to come by and take it. But, I mean, it's just as ridiculous as that. There's nothing good about it. You know, the fluoride is an extremely noxious substance. There's no reason to ever allow them to put it in your water supply. They got to get rid of it. And so, you know, it's part of the nuclear program. So it was the principal hazardous waste generated during making the bomb. And that's why all the hoo-ha about 1945, when they started telling you it was good for you, so that you could let them use your water supply to dispose of it.
And I think really it was back in the 1940s when the Manhattan Project was going on, and they were enriching the uranium, which takes a tremendous amount of fluoride. And adjacent to those plants where they were enriching the uranium, while the fluoride was getting out, it was killing the cattle, it was killing the orchards, it was harming the health of the people. They had to do something to change the public perception of fluoride. So they hired a gentleman, well, actually it was in the 1950s, U.S. Public Health Service, hired a man named Edward Bernay, the master propagandist, the man who convinced women it was stylish to smoke, and today the second most common cancer in women is cancer of the lung. He was hired to convince the American people that this was a wonderful, wonderful thing. What we really needed to do was get all the water across America fluoridated, and change this idea of an industrial pollutant into a panacea. And, of course, something which was basically poisonous into the promise of a perfect smile and pretty teeth throughout all time. We'll be back in just a moment with Dr. David Kennedy and let him tell you more about this incredible scam and this very dangerous scam being perpetrated on the American people. Well, Dr. Kennedy, why don't you pick up this story and tell us, really, is there anything new that coming down the line as far as the water fluoridation here in California or throughout across the country?
Yes, there is a wonderful opportunity, and we may have a chance to drive a stake through the heart of this devil. The all 11 unions that represent all of the employees at the EPA headquarters in Washington, D.C., the scientists, the engineers, the toxicologists, have called for a moratorium on fluoridation until there is a complete and thorough investigation of the cover-up that's been going on the cancer osteosarcoma link. Osteosarcoma is a rare form of bone cancer that's found principally in young males. And there is a study that was completed in 2001 that is currently being hidden. You paid for it as citizens. The National Institute of Health paid for it. And it's being hidden in the library at Harvard and misrepresented by the Douglas at Harvard. In two different occasions, Douglas said that the study done by his graduate student, Basson, was confirmatory of his earlier paper, which was a terrible paper, that said there was no link between osteosarcoma and fluoride in the water supply. And Aaron Basson did a very, very careful reexamination of the data by actually interviewing where she could find the surviving people or the family, what water they were drinking for each year of life, and then she showed that there was a 6, 7, or 8-fold increase in bone cancer in young males if they were drinking fluoridated water at the alleged optimum level, which is 1 part per million, at the age of 7. And this is enormous. And then she's not the first to find this, but this is the... this is a real well-focused, clear, precise epidemiological study. Animal studies have found it, and it does the same thing in cell cultures. You can show sister chromatid exchange damage, and so you know it's a very consistent mutagen, carcinogen. And so Douglas was out telling the National Academy of Science, and then in another paper he gave in England, that Basson had confirmed his earlier findings in 1995. He published a study saying there was no link. No problem. But he included old men, old women, young women, and there was no reason to include those kind of numbers in there because those aren't the target population.
Hold that thought there, Dr. Kennedy, and we'll be back in just a moment. Our guest is Dr. David Kennedy, and we're going to tell you this incredible story of how they're poisoning our children. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening, David Kennedy. And Dr. Kennedy's been talking about this study that was done at Harvard, where they found a 7-fold increase in the incidence of osteogenic sarcoma of the bones of boys, at age 7, a 7-fold increase. Now, they can't tell the American people that this is what this is doing. People would object to the water fluoridation, which is, in my estimation, being used because it lowers the intelligence rate. It decreases fertility. It has a profound impact on the incidence of the onset of menarche of adolescence in girls. It lowers the testosterone count. It certainly increases the fragility of bones and doubles the incidence of hip fractures in many studies in postmenopausal women. And after all, aren't there too many older people out there anyway, and many of them will die after a hip fracture. So there is an agenda behind this, and it, in my estimation, is totally evil. But it is taking place, and over 65% to 67% of the communities in this country have fluoridated water, despite the fact that the employees at the EPA, and these are the scientists, these are the people who spent their life studying this sort of thing, are trying to tell the American people that they're being poisoned, and not a word of this is getting into the major media. So pick up the story there, David.
And they, even when they do get in the media, they always say, oh, those anti-fluoridationists claim this, but it's known to be safe by the Center for Disease Control or somebody else. So we would get to make claims, and everybody else gets to know. So there's a terrible bias in media, and one of the reasons that happens is that they make a lot of money advertising fluoride dental products, and that there's billions of dollars spent annually on advertising this stuff, so you don't get a fair shake from the media. The bone cancer study is really the one that has acted as the trigger, at least this time around, to get the EPA, all of the unions at the EPA, to join calling for a moratorium. And I think that's significant, because what we were asking is not only that they investigate why government money was spent on a study, and that we can't even see the study. You have to go to the library at Harvard and check it out of the rare books. So they're basically hiding the study. It's called Played Hide the Ball. And two, that, you know, that why the lead, the supervisor of the study, Dr. Douglas, was out misrepresenting to the National Academy of Science Review of Fluoride Committee what the findings were. You know, that's scientific fraud, in my opinion. Here we are out trying to cover up an adverse health effect that is clearly associated with a government program, and what are they doing about it? They're not doing a darn thing. And so the EPA scientists have all called for a congressional investigation. Now, what can you do about it? You've got to go on the Internet or pick up a telephone and call your local representatives, your senators and your congresspeople, and tell them that you want action. You don't want more rhetoric. You want action on this call for a moratorium. You want the investigation. You want the truth to come out, and whatever that might be. But there's just a ton of stuff that's getting swept under the rug there, and they'll do it again. They've done it before. The 1977 Congressman Fountain had congressional hearings, and he said, we can no longer assure the American public that fluoride is not a carcinogen. You know what? I can assure the American public that it is a carcinogen, because the evidence is now in. Here we are 30 years later, and we know exactly what is happening. This stuff is causing cancer, and as Dr. Stan mentioned, there are lots of things that happen when you swallow this stuff. You know, you get an increased heart disease, you get the early onset of puberty, you get thyroid suppression. There was a map just recently of the obesity problems in the United States. And if you just look at the states that have the highest obesity problem, they're also the ones with the most fluoridation. Kentucky was one of them, I recall, and all that up and down the eastern seaboard, which is highly fluoridated. So, you know, let's poison the American public. Don't put the same person in charge of your water that's also in charge of your retirement program, because Social Security would really go upside down if you began to have a nice long lifespan. So let's put a chemical in there that causes lots of systems to break down.
And you know, it's really so interesting. I was reading I have a book that was published back in 1962 by it was the SIBA Man and His Future. And here were all the elitists. There was Julian Huxley and Francis Crick and all of this elite group. These elite scientists who, you know, really think they know what's so much better for us. And they were talking about population control. And one of the things they were talking about was maybe putting something in the water. And somebody else said, well, you know, why don't we put fluoride in the salt? And they said, oh, well, the Swiss tried that. Nobody, you know, it didn't work very well because some people used more salt than others. But they were talking, what can we put in the water to control fertility? Well, they know that because aren't there scientific studies that show there's a relationship between water fluoridation and fertility, and water fluoridation and the sperm count?
Not only that, there's a study by Frenny that showed that there are fewer children born. The higher level of fluoride in the water supply, the fewer children are born. So is it affecting the sperm count? Sure. Is it affecting the fertility of the woman? Sure. Is it affecting every single system in that human's body? Here's the deal. You can go to, don't take my word for it. Go on the internet and go read what the Center for Disease Control says. The predominant effect of mercury the predominant effect of fluoride is primarily topical and post-eruptive. It means the teeth got to be in your head and it's got to be actually touching the tooth or the saliva or the plaque that's on the tooth. And so that makes about as much sense as to drink the water as it would be drink, you know, sunblock.
And basically what you're saying is that Centers for Disease Control says that a fluoride works to control cavities topically. It doesn't work by drinking it. It doesn't work, you know, by drinking lots and lots of water. It works only topically. Why does it work? Because it kills the bacteria. It is a terribly effective poison. It kills the bacteria in your mouth, and that cuts down on the cavities, because cavities is a bacterial disease. Isn't that right, Doctor?
That's true. It's true. It's an infection. But there are lots of things that kill bacteria, like salt and baking soda, and you know, why don't pickles rot? You know, here you got a little vinegar and salt. So there's lots of ways to kill cavities, but the level in the water is not sufficient to cause the death of the germ. It's not high enough. So they're basically lying through their teeth. Excuse the pun. But toothpaste is high enough to kill germs. But there's stuff that would kill germs a lot better that wouldn't hurt you a bit, like baking soda and salt. So why would you give your child a lethal dose of fluoride in a family-sized tube of toothpaste for a 40-pound child? Why would you give your child a toxic substance to brush with? I mean, you know, they'd arrest you if you handed them a 45-caliber pistol to play with, but, you know, you still... go read the tube. It says, keep out of reach of children. Shouldn't that be bad for sales? No, everybody goes out and buys this stuff and gives it to their kids.
Well, now, Dr. Kennedy, you are a dentist. Why do the vast majority of the dentists support water fluoridation?
Because they're taught. Look how dental schools get money. Is that they get grants from the United States federal government. They're accredited by the American Dental Association, ADA. It's not a government agency. It's a trade association. Look at the revenue streams to the ADA. The ADA accepts money from toothpaste companies. They accept monies from dental supply companies, the Johnson & Johnson, medical companies. And so they have their hand in the pocket of all industry that has anything to do with dentistry. And so they get all this money from their seal of approval that goes on these toothpaste tubes. And so when you go to a dental school that's accredited by the American Dental Association, you're taught that all the products that the ADA has accepted are the appropriate way to treat the patient. And so you're taught that mercury is good in the teeth. You're taught that fluoride is good. All the things that the ADA says. So every graduate of dental school in the United States is indoctrinated with the ADA dogma before they get out of school. And so, you know, they're not thinking. They're basically little memorization programs, and so they just memorize what's going on in school and go out and they tell their patients the same thing they learned, or they think they learned. And who's opposed to fluoride? Oh, it's all the chemists and the toxicologists and the people that actually study the impact of materials on physiology. Your dentist can't even carry on the discussion with the cancer researchers. They don't even understand what a sister chromatid exchange is. They don't even understand what makes up a mutagen. They're basically just parroting back the things that they learned in dental school. I know, because I used to parrot it back.
And I did exactly the same thing. You know, I thought I was really so smart because I simply repeated what I'd been taught in medical school and never went to the original scientific studies. Now, the material is out there. I mean, there's a journal called Fluoride. And it is carries article by chemists throughout the world who are frightened to death about what's going on. Professors of chemistry realize how toxic fluoride is. They realize how dangerous it is to the health of the human being. And yet PubMed and so many of the things on the internet will not carry that, will not even mention the journal Fluoride. Why? Well, because back in 1950, the U.S. Public Health Service decided to push water fluoridation. They hired Edward Bernays to propagandize the American people. And of course, they have simply put pressure on anybody who's come out against them. And we can give you example after example, and we have a video or a DVD called The History of Water Fluoridation. And we name the names of people whose careers have been destroyed, for daring to speak out, or people who've been threatened, like Dr. Harvey Limbach, who's a professor of preventive dentistry up at the University of Toronto. He told me personally he couldn't come on my program because he'd been threatened if he told the truth about water fluoridation. Philip Mullinex, Dr. William Marcus, who worked for the APA, was concerned about the fact they were covering up the carcinogenic effect of this. And anybody with an academic medicine who tells the truth is going to be destroyed. Could this really happen in America? Could it happen, David?
It's happening now.
We're going to be back here in just a moment with Dr. David Kennedy. It is so important because you must understand they're poisoning your children. And, of course, anybody who wants to check what I'm saying, go to fluoridealert.com. That's fluoridealert.com. Or .org, I guess.
.com is the ADA way.
.org. Fluoridealert.org. Go there and get this information. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, David Kennedy, and this is really one of my favorite subjects. And David, of course, you've been out. How long have you been in this battle trying to wake people up as to how they're poisoning our children?
Well, I took the fluoride out of my office in 1984, but I didn't really get heavily involved until they came to my state and decided that we needed to put this chemical in all the 30 million people's water who didn't have it. And spent lots of money, lobbied the crooks and thieves in Sacramento, and managed to get a mandatory fluoridation bill passed that they're using as a political cover to force 30 million people who don't want this chemical in their water supply to drink it. That got me involved in 95.
And really, I think what's so vitally important for people to understand the impact this has on the brain, on the mind. Do you want to sort of develop that idea? What does fluoride do to the brain and the mind?
Well, it destroys it, for one thing, is that there's a number of studies showing that it's a neurotoxic substance, that even one of the very first accidents that they had making the nuclear bomb, the pipe broke and the workers inhaled some fluoride, and they were three different conditions. One guy was in a coma, another guy was jabbering like he was on methamphetamine or something and speed, and the other guy was lethargic and confused. And Mellanex found all of those behaviors in the rats that she poisoned with fluoride too.
Now, Dr. Phyllis Mullinex was a she had a staff position at Harvard, and she worked for the one of the dental institute. What was the dental institute?
The Forsyth Dental Research Institute, and the National Institute of Dental Research threatened Harvard, said that if she published her study showing that fluoride in the water of rats was, or actually injected in the rats, it wasn't in the water, she injected in rats, gave the rat the exact same blood level of fluoride that your child experiences in the dental chair. And so she used a very conservative technique. A single burst of fluoride at one point in time during pregnancy of the rats caused the rat to have a permanently hyperactive offspring. Do we have children with hyperactive problems? And so that didn't sound very good to the dentists, and because, you know, they've been promoting fluoride use in pregnant women, they've been promoting fluoride use in children, and they certainly wouldn't want to find that they were part of the terrible amount of learning disorders that we've had in children. So they told her that, you know, she couldn't publish the study. She said, I didn't come here to Harvard to not do research. I came here to, you know, research issues. And they said, well, if you publish that, you'll be fired. Well, she published it and got fired. She sued him for unlawful termination, et cetera, et cetera. And that one of the things she pulled out was a letter from Jack Hine, who was the director, who had recruited her from the Boston Hospital for Children. Says, please come and help us at the Forsyth Research Dental Institute to study the effects of mercury and fluoride. Well, she never got to mercury, but the first time she even looked at fluoride, you know, they had the canner. So I don't think they want to know the truth there at Harvard. I think they just want somebody to fill a position.
Well, I think it's even more diabolical than that. I believe that there really are people who would want to alter our minds and our outlook, and one only has to read the writings of Bertrand Russell, who in his book, The Impact of Science on Society, said, by diet, injection, and injunctions, working in combination, we can alter the beliefs and attitudes of our children to that the leaders of the country would want. By diet, injections, and injunctions. What are they going to put in the diet? What are they going to put into the injections that they're giving to our children that would alter the function of their minds? We're going to be back in just a moment with Dr. David Kennedy. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Dr. David Kennedy, and we're talking about the terrible toxic effects of water fluoridation. Now, Dr. William Hersey worked in the EPA Water Division, Water Safety Division, and he actually testified before the United States Senate. I believe it was back in about the year 2000. He pointed out there were at least six separate studies that showed the damaging effect of water fluoridation on the minds of people, and these were well documented studies. I'm sure there have been studies since then, but by the year 2000 there were at least six separate studies, one of them being that study done by Dr. Phyllis Mullinex. And yet his testimony before the United States Senate was totally blacked out by the controlled media. Do you want to pick up on some of the studies that have been done over in China and elsewhere about the disastrous effects on the mind, on the brain, and his function by fluoride and fluoride in the water?
Certainly. And that, you know, in China they have quite a large area that is called endemic fluorosis. And this isn't the stuff they're putting in your water. This is natural fluoride. This is water that is old, going through decomposed granite. So they have natural fluoride. We have areas in the United States that have natural fluoride in the water. That's West Texas, Colorado, parts of Kansas, some parts of Arkansas have natural fluoride in the water. And it's legal to have 4 parts per million fluoride in your water. And that what they found was that if the children were raised in an area that had 4 parts per million fluoride in the water, they had a lot more children that were lower IQ, and they had no genius. All the genius was gone. And so that was one study. There's another study. What happens if you drink fluoride in the water is you get dental fluorosis. And so they had another way to look at it. They simply went through and took the dental records of the kids, and the ones that had dental fluorosis, they marked down dental fluorosis. The ones that didn't, they marked down no dental fluorosis. And then they went and looked at their test scores. And that showed that the kids with dental fluorosis had a much lower IQ on their test scores than the kids that did not have dental fluorosis. And so dental fluorosis just means that the kid was exposed to fluoride during the time that his teeth were developing. Well, apparently the damage to the teeth is just a window to what's happening to the brain. Is that if you have funny-looking spotted teeth, you've got also a funny-looking spotted brain. And that's a tragedy, because in America today, in a fluoridated community, 66.7% of the children, and this is a 1987 study, 66.7% of the children have some degree of dental fluorosis of at least one tooth. So, you know, clearly we're causing problems in the children. And that it's not that they don't know this. They know this perfectly well, and what they do is they spend all their time and their money figuring out how to spin the story differently so you won't understand your kids are, you know, being injured. There's a huge bunch of studies. Mullinex was looking at animals. Human studies find the same things that Mullinex did in animals.
And there are actually 2 studies out of China. In fact, for anybody who's interested, we have put together a syllabus called The Hidden Agenda that contains many of the scientific studies, or the summaries of these scientific studies published in the journal Fluoride or elsewhere, showing how this lowers the IQ. And it's not simply by accident. I was reading an article earlier this evening that they've evaluated the young people graduating from high school in the United States today. Half of them to two-thirds of them would be incapable of getting into college because they can't read, don't have English, they do not have the ability to function on a high level. Our children, when they compete with children graduating from high schools in other countries throughout the world where they do not allow fluoridation, and they don't allow fluoridation in India. In fact, we have a letter from one of the people there in India saying, why would you want to put fluoride in your water? We're trying to get it out of our water here, and you're putting it in your water. But we compare our children with children graduating from school in Latvia and Lithuania and other countries, and our children can't compete. That didn't happen by accident, and it's not all the fault of a poor educational system. We're damaging the minds of our children. Could anything be that evil? What do you think, David?
It is that evil. It's every bit that evil. And that there are even some new studies. Li and Zhao were the first ones doing the studies on IQ in China, and there's been a new one. I don't have it on my desktop here, but even a new one showing just the same thing that the first two did: is damage the IQ if you expose the child to fluoride during brain development.
And of course, over in China, they want excellence. They're educating for excellence. Here, we're educating for mediocrity. Over there, they're trying to limit the fluoride intake of the children because they don't want to damage their brains. Here in America, they want to fluoridate all of our water supply. Why would anybody want to do something like that? We're going to be back here in just a moment. At Radio Liberty, our special guest this evening, Dr. David Kennedy. This is such an important subject, and I hope maybe you'll go to our webpage and pull down my December 2004 newsletter and November and December. Get the information, check it out. Could it be true? Well, our guest this evening, Dr. David Kennedy, who's a dentist and who's been leading this battle for a long period of time, trying to get the American people to understand that we're putting something which damages the mind, which, of course, decreases the fertility, the impacts on the endocrine system and produces a premature adolescence in girls, gets them started menstruating much earlier. It weakens the bone, it lowers the testosterone count, it lowers the sperm count. It affects every organ in the human body. A significant increase in the incidence of heart disease in communities that have fluoridated water compared with other areas, those that do not. And yet, you will not find this mentioned in the controlled media. So, Dr. Kennedy, are we making any progress? Are people beginning to understand what's going on, do you think?
I think a couple of things have happened fairly recently that are helping. One, the environmental community, who have been more or less asleep at the switch, believing Bernays, that fluoride was wonderful, are beginning to wake up and realize that what they're putting in the water is raw, untreated, hazardous waste. And it has just a little bit of fluoride in it, a lot of other stuff. And so that kind of turned some heads when we finally became aware of the fact that hydrofluorophilic acid is not toothpaste. And two, the recent call for an investigation by all 11 unions at the EPA, I think, give us an opportunity to make Congress do what they're supposed to be doing. Is it what they will do if you don't make them is they'll support industry. And you wouldn't believe the industries that got fluoride to get rid of or leak it out of their smokestacks or chimneys or in the water supply. Concrete, smeltering, almost any kind of fuel manufacture, any kind of welding, any kind of flux, any kind of workers are exposed to fluoride in industry. The standards are so high. There's a study on dogs, a beagle exposed to a legal level of fluoride, half the legal level of fluoride in a factory for 6 weeks. Had emphysema. And so, do you think maybe workers working in a factory might develop emphysema if they were there for 60 years or 16 years or 16 weeks?
I mean, there have been all sorts of studies that show the terrible effect on the lungs. We have so many people with chronic obstructive pulmonary disease all across America today, and gee, nobody knows how they got it.
I don't know. And so what the industry always does is they always blame it on the worker. Oh, he must have lived in a polluted city, or he must have smoked cigarettes, or he must have done this, or he must have done that. When in fact, it's the level of fluoride in the workplace. If you're a manufacturer of any kind of metal, there was a killing fog in Dora, Pennsylvania.
Hold that thought right there for just a moment. Here, we'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, our guest this evening, Dr. David Kennedy, who is a dentist, who, of course, is very active in the effort to get the truth out about how they're poisoning our children, how they're poisoning our adults with water fluoridation. And so pick up the story there, Dr. Kennedy.
Yeah, fluoride is a terrible substance. It comes out of every factory that is doing any kind of metal smelting. But the cover-up has been going on for, all throughout this century. And in the 30s, there was a fog in Dora, Pennsylvania. It's called the killer fog of Dora, and a lot of people just walking down the street dropped over dead, and it was a foggy evening, and they were saying, the air must have been too thick for them to breathe, and autopsy showed that these people died from fluoride exposure, and the U.S. government rushed in there and said, no, it wasn't that, it was thick air, and they basically, the records are still there. We know what killed the people in Dora. But, basically the government spent their time and money to lie to the American people. And that's, I don't think, an appropriate function of a government agency, but that's what they did.
Well, of course, the same thing had happened over in Europe. Of course, they did a lot of refining of the fluoride over there. And what basically happened, they had a valley, and I've forgotten exactly where.
Meuse River Valley.
And there was inversion so that the smoke couldn't get out, coming out of the smokestacks, couldn't get out of the valley. Some heavy air came in, and it trapped it there. And I don't know how many people they had die there in Meuse River Valley. And so when it happened in Dora, they couldn't let the American people know this. Could impact on the industrial production in this country. Now, certainly there are ways to take it out, of the smokestacks. There are ways to protect the workers. There are ways to protect the people who live in the area adjacent to these plants that are spewing out the fluoride-laced smoke. But it cost money, and they didn't want to put the money out. They would rather sacrifice the lives of the people working in the plants and those people adjacent to the plants and those people in Durham, and they simply lied about it.
And they have knocked down those levels of fluoride. They don't leak the same level, but you know what? They're still leaking fluoride. There's a big wedge of cancer that's downwind of all of the oil refineries. And they say, well, you know, it's probably some toxic substance coming out of the oil refinery. Well, what do you suppose that could be? How do you think they take that big old thick long molecule of bunker oil and turn it into that nice thin gasoline that you run through your car? They crack it with fluoride. And that's what's leaking out of the factories. So, you know, it's a widely used industrial chemical, and it has lots of use. I mean, even if you wanted to etch a computer circuit board, they use fluoride in etching computer circuit boards. It'll eat glass, so you can etch glass with it. So there's lots of uses for fluoride, but that's exactly what the problem is all these people want to continue to use it, but they don't want to pay the piper. And the piper is premature death, arthritis, cancer, thyroid damage, lower IQ in the children, hip fracture in the elderly.
And the fact that they know this, and the fact this is being intentionally and purposely and maliciously covered up, and the fact that 11 of the unions there that work for the APA have come out and called for a moratorium and an investigation, and not a word of this in the media, because I haven't read it anyplace, is simply as a reflection of the degree of control that exists over what the American people think. Where's that been written up, David? I haven't come across that, because I read the New York Times regularly, and the Washington Post, and the Wall Street Journal, and a couple of other local newspapers. I haven't seen anything at all about the EPA scientists, and I'm not suggesting it isn't true, because I've talked to Dr. Hersey from the EPA, but obviously they're keeping this as one of the best-kept secrets.
Well, there may be a crack in the old veneer of the Time magazine is supposedly going to come out either next week or maybe even this next issue with an article on fluoride. Now, I'm going to hold my breath, because we know that they talked to Paul Conant and attended a meeting in Bellingham, Washington, but they also spent a great deal of time with the Center for Disease Control and the spin doctors at the ADA. And so, you know, if you don't know science, these guys can just turn you around.
Well, I think for our scientists, pardon, for our listeners, Dr. Conant, Paul Conant, is a professor of chemistry. He is chairman of the Department of Chemistry, and it is his website, fluoridealert.org. Fluoridealert.org. We recommend that to you very strongly, because it will give you the links to all of the other websites. It will tell you so much of what we're trying to tell you here. You've got to get the information, and you've got to find out, because if they're poisoning your children and your grandchildren, shouldn't you be concerned? If what Dr. Kennedy and I are saying is not true, you've got nothing to worry about. If it is true, and they've been able to cover it up because of the control of the media, then can you believe anything you're being told in Time Magazine or U.S. News and World Report or Newsweek or the New York Times or the Washington Post or the Wall Street Journal? David, let's tell our listeners how they can get to your website or Keepers of the Well, the organization you're affiliated with.
Yes, and the Keepers of the Well is an excellent way to go in and review what happened at the last congressional hearing. It's Keepers of the Well, all one word, .org. And that I know that you have that DVD that the citizens there in Salt Lake put together with the help of Mark Flack on Is Your Water Safe? And, you know, for people who want to learn about the fluoride issue, here's an excellent DVD you can get from Dr. Stan, and that is a wonderful review of all the things that we've learned. It's got Bill Hersey and Phyllis Mullinex on it, and it's got me, and it's got Paul Conant. And it's got basically the who's who on the fluoride side.
Got Dr. Limebach before he was threatened and told he couldn't speak again. This is professor up at University of Toronto.
Yeah, isn't that nice? I guess they don't believe in freedom of speech in Canada. But dentistry never did believe in freedom of speech. They've been silencing dentists for years about the mercury issue, so this is just an extension of that small-minded attitude that dentistry has about different opinions.
But when you're talking about poisoning the children, how can you justify that?
It's not justifiable. It's immoral, in my opinion. But that's what they do. The fact that they're doing it is pretty clear.
Well, there's a wonderful new book out. It's called The Fluoride Deception by Chris Bryson. We recommend that book very strongly. The DVD that Dr. Kennedy is talking about, what was the title of that?
Is Your Water Safe?
Is Your Water Safe? And there's so much more. I have a talk I've given myself entitled The History of Water Fluoridation, put together a wonderful syllabus that has so many of the letters from all of the countries over in Europe. They don't allow water fluoridation in Europe. I think there's only one or two places in Great Britain, maybe 10-15% of their water is fluoridated. And of course, Ireland, of course, they just assume the British hate the Irish, so they try to fluoridate their water. But you know, the rest of Europe is not fluoridated. All throughout the world, they understand the danger of water fluoridation. We have those letters all produced in the syllabus. You'll actually read them, what the people say. And the people in India are saying, why do you want to put fluoride in your water? We're trying to get it out of our water over here.
And it's hard to get out of the water, too.
Right. And how can people get to Keepers of the Well and get to your website or the websites that will really give them the information?
Well, you know, you've got Paul Connett on there. The fluoridealert.org is an excellent website. And you mentioned fluoride deception. Paul Connett and his son Mike have done a wonderful interview with the author of Fluoride Deception, Christopher Bryson. And they've got a half-hour DVD that I would tell anybody that, you know, when they get the copy of the book, get the DVD, too, because it's Christopher Bryson talking about how he put the book together and how he learned what he learned and his own experience in discovering what was going on with the fluoride issue. It's an excellent DVD.
And the name of the book, again, is The
Fluoride
Deception.
Deception.
Right. And then, of course, the Keepers of the Well, is that .org or .com?
.org, and it's basically, we were able to get Congress to have started off with just a series of questions, but one of the things that I've encountered is I've been trying to fight this attack on our society for the last decade, a lot of the issues, we keep plowing the same field. As I'm from Kansas, and I don't like to plow that field again and again and again, and one of the things is, you know, here's a drug, so we have the city council prescribing a drug for the population. The city council doesn't have the license to prescribe drugs. They don't have a right to prescribe a drug. They're not a doctor. And so did they do an examination? Do they know how much this drug that the people are going to consume, et cetera, et cetera? And so the dentist said, oh, this isn't a drug. This is just merely the adjustment of a natural substance that's found in the water supply. So one of the questions we sent to the FDA was that is fluoride, when added to the public water supply for the purpose of reducing tooth decay, a drug that's regulated by the Food and Drug Administration? And they replied, FDA replied that it took them 2 years, but they replied that any substance used to prevent, treat, or ameliorate a disease of man or animal is a drug subject to the regulations of the Food and Drug Administration. Well, that's a good. And so what fluoride-containing substance intended to be ingested or swallowed has the FDA approved? And they replied, none. So when you want the FDA to approve a fluoride substance that you're supposed to swallow, like a fluoride tablet or a vitamin, they say there's no evidence of effectiveness as prescribed and labeled. So that's what happens. Yes, it is a drug because it is a substance prescribed to treat or ameliorate disease of man or animal, and it's not approved by the Food and Drug Administration. So there we are. It took us 50 years to get the bureaucrats in Washington, D.C. to actually come clean and say, yes, it's a drug, and no, it's not approved. And then we went on with another series of questions about the actual substance that's added to the water supply. And, you know, and so the question of the EPA was, do you regulate this? No, we gave that up in 1986. And who did they give it up to? They gave it up to the American Water Works Association. Well, what is that? The waterworks, you know, sewers. They gave it up to the people that run the water treatment plants and the sewage plants. Okay, and so what kind of regulation do they have? They have what's called a Standard 60. Standard 60 means that you can take any kind of fluoride hazardous waste material from your mining industry and give it to the water people, and they'll put it in the water. No purification, no treatment, no nothing, no nada. And all you got to do is once a year send a sample of that stuff for testing. So that's a pretty easy standard, I'd say. And so they said, well, what are the results of the testing? And they said they didn't have any batches that had been tested. So since 1986, they haven't tested any of this stuff.
Well, I think it's important for our listeners to know that 90% of the communities that have fluoridated water, add something that is taken from the scrubbers of the smokestacks and the fertilizer industry. And it is not simply fluoride, although part of it is fluoride, I think about 50%. It contains arsenic. It contains cadmium. Does it contain any lead?
Yes, it's 23% hydrofluorophosphic acid.
Right, and then, of course, it contains the polonium-20, which is a radioactive material that breaks down into lead. So this is what they're doing now. This is too toxic to vent out of the smokestacks into the air because, of course, it'd be in violation of the EPA rules. It's too toxic to put in rivers. It's too toxic to put in lakes. It's too toxic to put in storage dumps. So they put it into our water. I mean, what madness is that? I mean, how much arsenic can you give people? How much lead can you give people? Is there any studies it's safe to give them? Of course, there's not. And yet, the average American has no idea, when they talk about water fluoridation, what is in the material they're putting in. You want to pick up on that idea, David, because this is pretty the most incredible story.
Exactly. And you mentioned lead for a second. There are two huge studies. Now, understand that all the tooth decay studies in the United States combined, they're less than, 100,000 children in, that all of the studies for the last 50 years, less than 100,000 children, but you go to two huge studies with 450,000 children, showed that if they had hydrofluorosilicic acid added to the public drinking water, the blood level of lead skyrocketed in these children. And if they happened to be black or Hispanic children, the black children had a six-fold increase in children with above 10 micrograms per deciliter, which is immediately damaging the IQ, and the Hispanic children had a four-fold increase if there was any other source of exposure to lead. So what they were able to determine is that hydrofluorophosphic acid is a very strange element, and what it does, it actually sucks the lead out of the food or the other water or whatever they're drinking. Actually, it wasn't the water. The lead levels in the water were adjusted for. So the lead was coming from someplace other than water, but the HFSA actually drags it into the child's body. And that a little further research found that there's a patent on hydrofluorophosphic acid. And the patent filed with the U.S. Patent Office is that for HFSA will extract lead from brass. It's the only substance we know that will extract lead out of the brass.
And this is what they're putting into your water is hydrofluorosilicic acid. And there's not one person in 1,000 in America who knows that, unless, of course, they've read Chris Bryson's book or heard Dr. Kennedy or somebody else who's knowledgeable on this subject. How could you conceal it from the people? Very simply, you control the media.
And never tell the truth about the substance.
But, of course, think of the damage, because, there's no safe level of lead. Think of the damage that they're doing to the brains of these little black children and of course, to the Hispanic children and to the white children as well, but they're not getting anywhere near as high a level. Where is the NAACP and Jesse Jackson and when we need him?
What we need to do is get his phone number, and I'll call him, because, they'll step up and straighten this out when they understand what it's causing to their community. And that's what the article is about by Roger Masters. He has researched for the last 30 years at Dartmouth, has been to look at the impact on society of heavy metals. And so he's the one that showed that if a child has a high blood level of lead at certain key points in his growth and development, he's more likely to end up in jail for a violent crime than the same kid, same ethnic background, same social background, who had a low blood level of lead. So basically, if you give a high blood level of lead to a kid, it makes them a violent, stupid criminal.
Do you have that copy of that article? Because I would love to see it.
I got it right here. I think I can probably email it to you.
Well, if you wouldn't mind, I'd really appreciate it. Because it's important that I have the information so I can get it out. I don't have you with me all the time. But Dr. Kennedy's right on the cutting edge of what's going on. And that's one advantage I have, is that I don't have time to read all of these things. But Dr. Kennedy is an expert on both fluoride and, of course, on mercury and the impact on the brains of our children. That we're producing structural damage. We're actually destroying the brains of our children. They know that with fluoride, but also as far as the lead that is in the hydrofluorosilicic acid that they're putting in, so they can put in the fluoride to destroy the brains of our children. And in China, they're doing everything they can to get the fluoride out of the water. In India, they're doing everything they can to get the fluoride out of the water. And here in the United States, they're doing everything they can to get 100% of our population communities fluoridated. Here in California, they got this to the legislature. They spent an awful lot of money there on those legislators, didn't they?
And who was there all the time? Cargill. Who's Cargill? Cargill runs the plant that produced the hydrofluorosilicic acid down in Florida. They're trucking the stuff, hazardous waste, from Florida to California to put in your water supply. That doesn't make much sense to me.
Well, it does if you have another agenda, and this is the thing that bothers me, is I really believe there really are wicked and evil people out there across America who are unconcerned about destroying the minds of our children. But you need to find out, if you're out there in the listening audience, could this possibly be true? Go to fluoridealert.org, and of course that's Dr. Paul Conant. He's professor of chemistry, and we have other professors who are trying to get the truth out. We have a few doctors who are trying to get it out, but unfortunately the AMA and the CDC are on the other side. They have a different agenda. Well, we'll be back in just a moment with Dr. David Kennedy here at Radio Liberty. Well, David, we got about 3 minutes for you to wrap up the program.
Well, Dr. Stan, thank you for having me on and allowing me to talk with your listeners. And the one thing I think they can do, other than make sure that their water supply is as pure as possible, is to take the time to pick up a telephone or write a letter or send an email to their congressman, their senator, and tell them that they want closure on this 50-year discussion of whether or not the experiment of adding fluoride to the public drinking water is safe and effective.
It really is a mass experiment on the American people, and we can see the end result, and the destroyed minds of our children. One in six children has a neurodevelopmental abnormality. Our kids can't compete when they finish high school. This isn't happening by accident.
This is not an accident, and it is a tragedy, and that it will take some gumption. Because it's not easy to say, I was wrong, I made a mistake, but that's what they have to do, is that they have to stop now. We have to stop using hazardous waste in the water supply. We need pure water, not infected water that is used as a disposal system for the phosphate fertilizer industry. And that's what I want your listeners to do, is to pick up those telephones, pick up those pens, get on the internet, go to the library if you don't have an email. And, you can type in Congress, and it'll give you the phone number of everybody in Congress. It's so easy. It would be a crime not to do your patriotic duty and tell your congressman. Because if they hear from enough of us, they'll always ignore us. But if they hear from enough of us, they think, I might not be able to get elected again. So then I might have to go get a job. So they'll do what is right. If they know we're watching, and that's what you got to do, is you got to let them know you're watching. You know that there's a cover up going on with the Harvard Bassin and Douglas, and so go after them. Tell them you want a thorough investigation.
Well, of course, Bassin was the one who came out and told the truth. It was the other fellow who was actually covering up the truth. And isn't he being investigated by the Institute of Medicine?
Yes, but they're gonna drag their feet and not find anything unless when they know we're watching.
But the thing is, they can't let the American people know the truth. If they knew the truth, maybe they'd realize that they're lying about lots of things, and that maybe we can't trust the Centers for Disease Control and the FDA, which of course knew that Vioxx was killing people with the heart disease, and we can't trust the NIH, where so many of these scientists are getting large grants from the very drug companies they're supposed to be regulating and investigating. David Kennedy, thank you so very much for being with us. It's always a pleasure.
Thanks for having me.
Good night, and God bless you.
Goodbye.
And this is Dr. Kennedy, certainly one of my favorite guests. I hope he will be yours as well. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and we hope that you're going to want to check out what you've heard this evening about water fluoridation. When I first heard this, I said this couldn't be true. And I began to do the research and go to the Journal on Fluoride and talk to the scientists and professors of chemistry at various universities who were trying to get the information out, and talking to Dr. William Hersey, who represents the vice president, the lawyer, the scientists back at the EPA, that are working with us trying to get the American people to know the truth. And, of course, to do something before more damage is done to the minds of our children. I hope that many of you will go to my website, www.radioliberty.com. That's www.radioliberty.com. My November and December 2004 newsletters are there, and you can pull them down and copy them. One of them is Dr. William Hersey's testimony. He was vice president of the Union of Scientists, the EPA, dealing with water. He works with water toxicity, and he testified before Senate, the United States Senate in 2000, pointing out that we were poisoning the people. And then, of course, my analysis of the fluoride toxicity and how it impacts on every aspect of our lives and attacks our thyroid and it attacks the sperm count. And one reason why so many men are having a sexual dysfunction or cannot get their wives pregnant is simply because of the toxicity of the fluoride. And they know that. They just don't want the American people to know that. Why are they unconcerned? Because it's all about population control. There are too many people in the world. And we've got, of course, to limit the number of people in the world. We don't believe in God. We believe that man is going to bring the utopia here. They're going to bring, man is going to bring the kingdom of heaven to earth. Well, I don't believe that for one minute. I believe that we're involved in a spiritual battle being played out on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield. So we hope that many of you will check out the facts. Go to my website of radioliberty.com where you can listen to our radio programs 5 hours a day on the Internet and not get much of anything accomplished, but you'll learn a lot. Pull down our newsletters at radioliberty.com. If you want more information on this subject, you'll find my Population Control Agenda monograph on the website. Pull it down, read it, study it, check the quotations, find out there really are people like Jacques Cousteau who's talked about the necessity of eliminating 350,000 people a day. Jacques Cousteau said that in the UNESCO Courier in November of 1991. And if you'd like a free copy of that UNESCO Courier article, we'd be glad to send it to you. If you'd like to get a free copy of either my November or December 2004 newsletters talking about what we're talking about, ask for the newsletter that deals with Dr. Hersey, H-I-R-Z-Y's testimony. We'll be glad to send you a free copy of our newsletter. And then, of course, we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival and for our leaders. We ask you to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection, because we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political, ideological, cultural, and in this instance, a medical and scientific battlefield. And the lines are clearly drawn. There are the people who have a different agenda, who believe there are too many people in the world who would destroy this great nation. Why? Because America was once a great Christian nation, and everybody in the world knew that. Today, well, if you were to say that publicly, you'd be attacked by every means of communication. So until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you.